Thank you so much.
Good morning, Knox College. How are you? I am so honored to be here. Thank you, President Amott, trustees, faculty, staff, alumni, parents, friends, family, but most of all, the graduates of 2017. Congratulations. I would also like to say congratulations to all of your loved ones who have stood by you on this journey. I'm sure all of y'all are very happy they're graduating because they're going to get a job, right? So big round of applause for your family, your friends, everybody who supported you. I am very humbled to share this special day with you, mostly because I'm included with my fellow honorees, Dr. Jackson and Ambassador Hartog-Levin. I aspire to be a tenth of what you both are, so congratulations to you. I have to admit, I'm overwhelmed right now. I always read scripts, so it's hard for me to just come up with words all on my own. I'm used to somebody else writing them for me. But it's overwhelming to think of all the distinguished people who have received honorary degrees from Knox: presidents, senators, cabinet secretaries, ambassadors, titans of business, going all the way back to Abraham Lincoln. So needless to say, there's a lot of pressure to be here to speak to all of you. Knox has such an incredible legacy of moral leadership, a place that was far ahead of its time in opening the doors to women, to people of color, and I know you all will draw on that legacy throughout your lives. You are tomorrow's doctors and lawyers and scientists and entrepreneurs. Some of you may disappoint your families and become an actor. But as your commencement speaker, it is tradition that I do pass on some words of wisdom, as it should be tradition that you pretend to listen and not be on Snapchat. So, as Sherwood mentioned, it wasn't so long ago that I was in a cap and gown myself. 4 years ago, I received my master's degree from Cal State Northridge. And just a little context, I come from a family of educators. Everybody in my family is a teacher. So I was the last person in my family to get a master's degree. My mom calls me the underachiever. But I do know there are a lot of first-generation people here today graduating. I applaud you, as I'm sure your families do too. It's very hard to be the first. For me, it was easy to be the last. I was the last born. I was the last one to get my master. I was the last one to get a job. I was the last to do everything because my sisters, my family paved the way. But you first generation kids, young adults, you guys are paving the way for the rest of your family members. So you should be very, very proud of that. Returning to school while I was working on Desperate Housewives was crazy. I was doing homework on the set of Desperate Housewives. I was working on my thesis in my trailer. I was reading textbooks during takes. And I was very nervous to go back to school. It had been a very long time since I had set foot in a classroom. I kept thinking to myself, what if I wasn't smart enough? What if I was too old? What if the students would think I'm just some dumb celebrity? Because there are some dumb celebrities. So I had to prove I wasn't one of them. But I had a curiosity that could only be quenched by learning. I went back to school because I wanted to better understand where I came from. As you may have guessed, I am from another country called Texas. I was born in Corpus Christi, and I grew up proudly as a Mexican-American. And I returned to school for a master's degree in Chicano studies, or what people like to call Mexican-American history, because I was seeking a fuller understanding of who I was, a genuine search for identity. I grew up, like many of you, as a hyphen, straddling two worlds. I'm a ninth-generation American. My ancestors arrived way before the Mayflower. I'm as American as apple pie, and I'm proud of my Mexican heritage. I love hamburgers and enchiladas. I listen to mariachi music and Justin Timberlake. Growing up in South Texas, I grew up very close to the border. And I remember the U.S.-Mexican border was a very different place then. You could cross back and forth, no problem. You didn't need a passport. My family would go to Mexico for the day, for lunch, for medicine, for a margarita. And at the time, it was just a short walk across a bridge. And all you needed was a few coins and to say those magic words, American citizen. I remember the border agent every time would ask nationality, and my father would say American citizen. I actually thought it was a password. I thought like tomorrow it might change to peanut butter and jelly. And I remember seeing a long line of people slowly inching along and my family just zooming in to the country. And I asked my father, why don't they just say the magic words? Maybe they don't know the password. And he said, well, because they were born on the other side. And I remember thinking, other side of what? And he said, la línea, the line. And I said, well, how did we get to be born on this side of the line? And he said, luck. We were lucky. And he was right, because it was a twist of fate that gave me the privilege of being an American. Or as Howard Buffett likes to call it, we won the ovarian lottery. I was born here, out of anywhere in this world. I could have been born somewhere where women are stripped of their rights, where there's no freedom of press or freedom of speech. I could have been born where it's forbidden to pursue your education or hopes and dreams. So to me, America is the greatest country in the world because it's an idea that all of us have the opportunity to pursue any vision we set for our lives. That's the idea that still draws talent from all over the world to our shores, and that allows all of you to dream big. In America, our ambitions aren't limited by what we look like or where we come from. But of course, we have a lot of work to do in achieving the ideal of the American dream and what that means. Because as hard as you work to get here, the tests and the late nights and the grades and the classes, an education like yours is still a privilege. A very rare privilege that not everyone gets to experience. When you receive your degrees today, you will be among the few in the world with such an education. And as my mother never ceased to remind my sisters and I, to whom much is given, much is expected. And this leads me to the word philanthropy. People always ask me, how did you get involved in philanthropy? What got you started? How did you think of this idea for your foundation? Why are you politically active? And it was actually something my family instilled in me very early on. You see, some of you may know, but I have an older sister with special needs. She was born prematurely, so her brain didn't finish developing. Her name is Lisa. She's the light of our family. And it was because of her we were introduced to the word volunteer very early in our lives. We volunteered for everything. I thought volunteer was a job. I thought you got paid for it. And I thought they just weren't giving me my money. But my mother made us volunteer for causes like the Special Olympics and the Boys and Girls Club. If Lisa was a part of any community program, my mother would sign all of us up as volunteers to that program in order for us to watch over her. So you learn a lot about caring for others when you have a sister like Lisa. And there are certain things that cannot be taught in a classroom or by professors. I remember one time when my sister went to high school, and she was mainstreamed into normal classes with normal students. And she encountered some people who were not so nice to her, people who didn't understand that she was different, but not less. And she came home one day with her Letterman jacket missing. Someone had stolen it off of her. And I remember, I was 10 maybe, and I was so mad, and I thought, who could steal a special needs jacket off somebody, off a student? And I said, Lisa, who would take your jacket? And she replied, someone who must have been cold. And that day, I learned about compassion, about putting myself in someone else's shoes. Lisa didn't get angry. She didn't get mad. She chose to see the best in someone, even if their intentions were bad. So I hope that you will choose to see the best in others too.
I know it's easy to say, and it's very hard to actually practice in life, but the technology that we have at our fingertips has done so much to connect us, but it can also bring out some of the worst impulses. It can numb us, and it can numb you. It can stop us from understanding what it's like to be on the other side of that phone screen or the other side of that computer screen. So we might be quick to judge the beggar outside of Starbucks, begging for money, begging for food, but how often do we really place ourselves in his shoes? How often do we ask ourselves, what is his story? What happened to him? How did he end up here? How could things have gone differently in his life? So I hope that along the way of your chosen paths, you will continue to find ways to show kindness and serve others. Because places like Knox have done so much to expand access to students from all backgrounds and walks of life. But we know that as a country, we have a lot more work to do. So it's going to be your jobs, each and every one of you, to help the next generation learn from your path and experiences. It's going to be your job to create a society of more equal opportunity for others. Something else I've always done in my life is reject the boxes that others may try to put you in. Don't let anyone else define you. If you belong to more than one world and you want to be a hyphen, embrace a hyphen, plant a flag on the hyphen, stand on the hyphen. Say to people, I'm not 50% this or 50% that. I'm 100% this all the time, and I'm 100% this all the time. You can be complex. It's okay. This country is big enough and diverse enough for all of our dreams. And this country needs diversity. Diversity is our country's greatest advantage. Not just diversity of skin color or ethnicity. I mean a diversity of thought and a diversity of life experiences. And on a campus as diverse as Knox, you live in close proximity with people from different walks of life. As you get older, it can all be too easy to cloister with those who think like you, who speak like you, who make the same amount of money. Don't live in a bubble. Keep building relationships with those who have a different point of view, who come from a different place, who speak a different language, who grew up differently. We have a lot of challenges facing our country today and our planet. And they all seem a lot worse when we talk past each other or when we demonize each other. But I have hope because of you, because of the graduates of today here at Knox College. Part of it is that your generation has the potential to make connections like no other, partly due to technology. But a lot of it has to do with all of you having an open and free mind, a mind that is not only tolerant of others, but that is interested in others and their contributions. Your generation is not hung up on differences. You're celebrating them. Your generation isn't interested in tearing things down. You want to build things up and leave a mark. And I'm pretty confident you're going to do that, because wherever you go in life, you'll bring the Knox spirit with you. I know you're going to do great things and that you're going to set the world on fire, maybe even a prairie fire. I didn't even know what that meant, honestly. But my friend who went to Knox told me to put it in there. But I think we're all put on this earth for a reason greater than you can ever imagine. Even as you sit here in your seats and you think you have plans for yourself, well, I'm here to tell you that life may have some other things in store for you. So be ready for anything and everything. And I'm going to leave you today with the words of Maya Angelou, my favorite poet. It's words that I live by. She said, people will forget what you said, and they'll forget what you did, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. So thank you for making me feel special today, Knox College, and congratulations to the class of 2017.